listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Friday, April 22nd, the day before the 92nd Blue Gold game in Notre Dame Stadium. I'm Tim Priester with Kevin Sinclair from Irish Illustrated. Pete Sampson joins us from The Athletic. We've got a lot of things to talk about here, guys, starting with the Blue Gold game draft. That was something different, fun, interesting, something that I think I know that there were some people at Notre Dame that were concerned about how well it was going to play streaming it out, but I think it played just fine and it flowed very well. We also have the news about Tyler Buchner's injury. I did the story the last couple of days on the Legacy Weekend, where as many as 300, I doubt that it reaches 300 former players, but there's going to be a whole bunch of former players in town for the Blue Gold game. And then I want to touch upon NIL and Brady Quinn's involvement. But first of all, Pete, your thoughts on the Blue Gold game draft. And do you think this is something that they will continue to do under Marcus Freeman?
I mean, as long as you have an NFL Hall of Fame or come back to play the part of commissioner every year, I'm sure that would be fine. Before we started recording, I said the most interesting thing was the fact that Josh Burnham was drafted with the defensive line. But in fact, the most interesting thing was like Tyler Buchner walking into the facility, because that was like the morning after, like, oh, what's up with Buchner and the ankle and everything. So, I mean, it was just kind of a fun, slightly goofy thing. I think for you and what I got most out of it was talking to Jerome Bettis afterwards. Probably what you got most out of was talking to Hunter Bivin afterwards. So I think it just was like kind of a fun, slightly goofy way to end spring ball.
Kevin, you watched it. I know you weren't there. Just some general thoughts on the process that they followed.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I don't know, I sort of think about a few press conferences ago where Marcus Freeman is talking about spring camps really grueling and they would like to add a little bit more fun, whether it's little competitions or whatever, into spring ball. And I think this is sort of a bit of that again. Like the draft adds a little bit more fun to it for the players, a little bit more excitement. It also creates, you know, PR perspective, a bit more media hype and more stuff rolling out on social media. And I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they've done a really good job of those types of things ever since Marcus Freeman was promoted. You know, and I think it just sort of falls in line with that. You know, it's new wrinkles, new head coach, new staff, and a few more things like this thrown in the mix. So I liked it.
And I heard right that they like the students will be given a team to cheer for. Is that correct? Did you hear about that, Pete?
I have not heard about that.
Maybe I'm wrong, and so I probably should. But it was like, okay, you guys, you cheer for blue, you cheer for gold, and so you have an equal distribution. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I thought I heard that. Anyway, I mean, it should be an incredible day in Notre Dame Stadium. The temperatures are going to be up in the upper 70s and maybe more. We had talked about a couple of weeks ago on a podcast that, boy, I hope the weather's great for the Blue Gold game. And unless the forecast has changed in the last 24 hours, it should be fantastic. But Tyler Buchner will not be participating in a Blue Gold game, along with, I believe, 12 or 11 other scholarship players. He slipped on the steps after a quarterback's meeting. I was wondering whether Marcus Freeman would be so forthright as to how he suffered the injury. Of course, I was thinking, if you say that, what the reaction is going to be on the message board. And I guess Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame don't really care what the message board says with regard to that. But I think it also speaks to the transparency of the Marcus Freeman era, at least up to this point. It happened. And so be it.
It was certainly more transparent than Brandon Wimbush's foot injury during the 2017 season, I think, or 2018 season. So, I mean, I think there's an acceptance, like either you're upfront and you're transparent about it, or we're going to find out what really happened and it may look worse in the end. So it's
true. Yeah, true.
Just, I would just roll with it. If you're Buchner, you're probably like, couldn't we like pretend nothing happened? And I mean, if there was no draft, maybe you could have, you know, if we weren't in that building.
Now, he was spotted on campus with a crotch. I mean, that was, it wasn't ever going to fly.
So it's, you know, it's disappointing for Buckner to not have a chance to sort of like show off a little bit on Saturday. Certainly it is disappointing if you were going to the game with the express purpose of watching Tyler Buchner, which I think we all said, who are you most interested to see on Saturday? We all would have led with Buchner, right? So
I don't think that should dissuade you from going to the Blue Gold game, but I understand.
No, the weather will still be great. It just is, you know, what would the 2007 Blue Gold game have been without Jimmy Clausen having been enrolled, you know, whether they're great or not. So it, that's disappointing, but I take what Marcus Freeman said at face value that he had 13 really good practices and they feel good about where they are at that position.
That was what I wrote about that was the last statement that he made. And I don't think anybody heard it at that point because you're already, because you're already thinking he slipped on the steps and hurt his ankle. And by all accounts, at least from what I've heard, he has had a good spring, but everybody wanted to see him in person, obviously. Kevin, your thoughts on that situation?
I mean, it's such a bummer for Tyler Buchner and for everyone, really. And, you know, you just look at his past, you know, sophomore season, first series of his first game, tore an ACL. That was a legitimate injury, right? Junior year, remarkable season. Senior year, COVID. After he had transferred to a more competitive program, misses his whole senior year. And then he comes in. And then, you know, spring games, the kid trips on stairs after a QB meeting. And now, you know, I would just hate to see like, a injury prone sort of narrative build when you really, you know, that's going to sort of naturally happen whenever he, you know, misses something. But when you look back, it's really some bad breaks, slipping on some steps, COVID in his senior year is a tough situation. But again, he was there for the scrimmage recently and he'll be back soon.
I wrote about injury prone and I could probably argue that with some of our subscribers forever. I've always hated the expression. I hated it when I was a participating athlete, because especially with football, I mean, what's injury prone? I mean, everybody gets hurt at some point. And look, I understand it. I get it. And I've said on the podcast that, is he going to be able to make it through a season healthy if he's playing every game as a full-time starter? I get that. I just don't like the expression because I think a lot of times it's going to piss people off too. Frankly, I think a lot of times it's used by people that have never been an athlete when you say somebody's injury prone. Injuries happen within athletics, especially football. And so, you know, tripping on stairs or slipping on stairs, I've done it. The older you get, you're going to do it more.
We're all there.
Yeah. I literally know, and somebody said this to me the other day, I literally knew a guy and he was an older gentleman, but he fell down steps and died. So it can literally happen to anybody. And I understand the reaction to it. I just don't like the expression because, you know, sprained ankle on the football field. Yeah. It happens to every football player multiple times. But look, it is what it is. And everybody wants Tyler Buchner to remain healthy. And I get that. And I hope that he can as well. Legacy weekend. That's what I kind of coined the phrase. I don't know if Hunter Bivin actually gave it to me or not, but Hunter Bivin, former Notre Dame offensive lineman, who's now director of player development, has been put in charge of helping orchestrate in coordination with Marcus Freeman, of course, orchestrate getting former players to come back to the Blue Gold game and just creating a network. What they it started yesterday. Just the interaction between former players and current players is a great thing for the current players. It's a great thing for the former players. They feel like they're included now. That's something that Wes Pritchett and Sean. Why am I missing Sean's
Wooden?
Sean Wooden's he was excited about it as well. So, Pete, you read the story. What were your thoughts on that?
I think it's a really good idea. And I know that it was sort of kicked around, certainly pre-Marcus, but it was, I think, you know, when you talk to former players, I think there was sort of like the not really feeling super welcome or it'd be awkward. But it's, I think it serves two goals here. It's like you have these former players feel welcome, which means, especially in an NIL world, that maybe they're more likely to donate to something. But also, if you're a current player, it forces you to sort of, well, football ended for all of these guys, so it's going to end for me too. And they figured out what to do, so I need to start figuring out what to do. And I think Marcus went on the Inside the Garage podcast and talked a little bit about that. And I think, I don't know if it's Cam Hart or KJ Wallace talked about how, like, when you're a current player, you sort of convince yourself football is never going to end, because if you, once you accept that, then it's almost like a show of weakness that I'm not all in on football. And this sort of helps break that down a little bit. And I think it just, I mean, there've been, you know, some real tragic stories from Notre Dame football players in the last few years. I think some of them maybe were a little disconnected. So I think it also helps that. It helps guys feel more connected once they're gone, to their teammates, and, you know, be part of something a little bit bigger than themselves.
Kevin, how do you see this? And I, you know, I realize that former players aren't supposed to contact recruits, but how do you see this playing out for the benefit of Notre Dame's recruiting efforts moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking about this last night. You know, I'll give you an example. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed two offensive linemen who visited Notre Dame. They're big time recruits. And when they were there, Quentin Nelson and Sam Mustipher were there. And they both talked about, you know, it seemed like there was like a starstruck element right at first, especially with Quentin Nelson and who he is. But then they get to talking with them and they're talking about technique and scheme and those types of things. And there's, you know, they make a connection with them and realize how bright and high integrity a lot of these guys are. And then they make a personal connection with these guys who they also watch on TV on Sundays. You talk about this upcoming weekend, for example, Jaden Lamar will visit Notre Dame. He is a running back. He's going to, you know, likely get in front of Jerome Bettis and talk with him. I can say that, you know, I've done countless post-visit interviews over the years, and some of the most like wow factor type feedback I've heard has been surrounded around seeing big name alumni on campus. From parents as well. I remember talking to Tobias Merriweather's dad after the USC game and him talking about, I believe it was, you know, Joe Theismann and Jerome Bettis, you know, literally bumping into Jerome Bettis while he was there. And then just sort of, you know, seeing those are Notre Dame built guys and their son is going to be playing there and so forth. And, you know, I think it's huge for recruiting. It might be a little bigger than we'd even imagine.
Pete, I want to conclude segment one. I know you recently wrote about Brady Quinn's involvement in a NIL deal that involves charities. What I know about it, which is very little, is that is what NIL should be all about. Why don't you dive into that for us, if you could, please?
So I think it was early this year, Brady Quinn started thinking about the NIL space. He said that, you know, certainly the enthusiasm around Marcus Freeman kind of helped engage him on that, you know, or at least make him enhance the motivation. And it's what they set up. It's called Fund Friends of the University of Notre Dame. And it is a way that people donate to fund. And then that money is distributed to players for NIL space to sort of back their charitable work. Money goes to the charity directly itself too. So I believe, I want to say about 8 players will be involved in this sort of first round of it. Basically, if you're a player and you're interested in like the Boys and Girls Club of South Bend, like Jalen Seed, for example, grew up at the Boys and Girls Club in Hilton Head. That was a big part of his upbringing. If he wants to get involved in that locally, because it's a cause that's important to him, Fund will essentially pay him to do that, you know, as like an appearance fee almost. And then the Boys and Girls Club would also benefit directly from Fund, not only from the fact that a Notre Dame football player is there posting on social media about it, but like financially too, from Fund. So that's sort of what it is. I, you know, Brady, I asked him, like, is this meant to be sort of a counter to what's going on at Tennessee and the SEC? And I was like, no, this is not what this is about. And, you know, like Tom Mendoza is on the board of this. So look, if you're a Notre Dame football player and you can get involved in this, one, you can make some money, but also you're going to get your name and brand out there. And what Mendoza said to me was like, these are the kinds of people that businesses, for-profit entities, want to be involved with if they see you out there doing this. So they felt like that can be an upshot of the entire venture as well.
Well, that's good stuff. And not surprised that Brady Quinn's involved in it. And I'm glad that it's something that Notre Dame is involved in as well. And just to conclude this section, I am making the effort to, I think I said this maybe last time, Brandon Lee, who was hired by Notre Dame a couple months ago, to kind of orchestrate and organize the whole NIL process for Notre Dame. We're hoping to get an interview with him soon, shortly after the conclusion of spring football here this Saturday. We'll be back. Segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We start with a question from Play Like a Champ 7. After reading about the Legacy Weekend, it seems like such a no-brainer as Notre Dame has pushed the what can Notre Dame do for you narrative. Obviously, this is a big Marcus Freeman push, but was Brian Kelly the only reason this wasn't more important, or were there other factors?
I mean, would you say the only reason? Probably not, but I mean, Brian Kelly was much more closed off than Marcus Freeman was. I think that probably one of the undersold factors here is, like, I'm not saying Marcus Freeman is a former Notre Dame player, but Marcus Freeman is a former player at a Notre Dame level kind of thing, where I think he can relate to that in a way that Brian Kelly never could, on top of just being more accessible and authentic and sort of gracious with his time. Like, all of that, it all fits together. But I think the fact that Freeman has essentially walked in the shoes of someone like Wes Pritchett is important. And I think that probably resonates with Marcus.
Yeah, I wouldn't add like a whole, I would just echo everything Pete just said, but I also just say it seems more prominent now because I think Marcus Freeman is just a really good communicator too. You know, I talk to a lot of recruits, obviously, as a recruiting reporter. And it seems like that what Notre Dame can do for you is resonating a lot more than it used to with recruits and their parents. So I think, you know, again, the communicator being Marcus Freeman now sort of makes it more prominent just in its, on its own.
Yeah, I can't think of another specific reason other than Brian Kelly. And Kelly did initiate it, but he, you know, Freeman prioritized it. I mean, absolutely prioritized it, and Kelly initiated it, but didn't push for it. So, and then I give Hunter Bivin credit. He's the guy that's pulled it all together. I'm not saying there isn't another guy out there that could not have done that, but he did, and he's been proactive with it. And he knew that Freeman was excited about it and it was important, and Bivin wore that. So, you know, the other thing, Pete, what you said about, you know, I've said this several times on podcasts and I've written it. Marcus Freeman was recruited by Notre Dame. He was a Notre Dame kind of guy, but Ohio State made sense for him at the time. But I think at a young age, as a teenager, he got Notre Dame. He understood Notre Dame. And then spending the last year here as a defensive coordinator, he kind of wrapped himself up in it. So I think it's great. Give me an opportunity to maybe communicate with a few more guys that I've dealt with over the decades of covering Notre Dame. I think we're going to see a whole lot more coming back. I haven't asked Hunter Biven this, but I should have known that when I said up to 300 might be here, that our readers would want to know, all right, who are those guys? So in the aftermath of the weekend, I'm going to follow up with him and see if he can provide the definitive list of actually all the former Notre Dame players that showed up. Question from IC Gold, a little bit long, but thought it was entertaining. So here goes. What is the appropriate reaction to the Tyler Buchner injury walking downstairs? One, the Gook sucks and needs to be torn down and rebuilt immediately. Two, Under Armour footwear sucks and we need to switch to Nike. Three, Tyler Buchner sucks, is injury prone, and we will never win a championship with him. And oh, Dante Moore is trending toward Oregon. And four, I have done it myself. It's embarrassing, especially if your friends or an attractive member of the opposing sex sees it happen. I don't know if any of those fit, man, but
I think four would be my lead. Although if you had told me that that Tyler Buchner somehow tripped over one of those like roll-in dining carts, then we would have a different controversy altogether. Then Brian Kelly would be like, all right, point taken, sir. New facilities.
Yeah, Kevin,
I would just say four, of course. I mean, again, we talked about it in the first segment, and the injury prone narrative is just nonsense. I wrote about something similar when I was writing about Jabron Payne, because he, you know, had missed a bunch of time throughout high school and that sort of thing. And I interviewed his, you know, teammates and coach about, is it injury prone or is it just plain old bad luck? And when you look at it, they're all just separate incidents. And with Tyler Buchner and missing time in the past, again, tripping on some stairs after a QB meeting recently, and then missing his senior season in high school was simply because of COVID. I think that there is no injury prone narrative there. It's just a bad break, really.
I'd just like to wrap it up by saying, if you ever get your knee replaced, be careful going down steps, because you may fall. You may fall down the last couple, not once, but on two occasions. It can happen. GR Irish Fan 22, with Buchner out for the Blue Bowl game, what players are you most interested in keeping an eye on?
I would like to see Riley Mills, especially if he's getting in some matchups with Fisher or Alt. Because I think that's like, we know where Alt and Fisher are in their games, and we've seen what Fisher has done to Foskey in the past since they're practicing. I'd like to see Mills have some success in that. Beyond that, probably a Jaden Thomas, Deion Colsey, those would be two guys if they played well. Not that it would be indicative of what kind of season they're going to have, but they have something to build on moving into summer and training camp. And I think that there could be real value there.
You know, for me, like Nat, I know that you guys are going to name a lot of sophomore, juniors, seniors, fifth years. For me, honestly, naturally, as a recruiting reporter, the early enrollment guys are always just very interesting to me, because I've just been covering those guys for a year, sometimes 2 years, right? I met Aiden Govira when he was a sophomore in high school. So for me, Jadarian Price and Jaden Mickey were my picks as the most potentially underrated offensive signee and defensive signee. I think a lot of people agreed with that. And it's, you know, been no surprise to see that they've really kind of emerged, right? And you know, if you think about the impact, just as an example, like a Julian Love type cornerback developing at Notre Dame here in the next couple of years, that would be absolutely massive. So I'm really interested to see how he makes out, you know, in spring ball. And he seems like he's, you know, there's a lot of buzz about him. You know, there's a lot of running backs to look at. Estime and Diggs, of course, still young themselves, but Jadarian Price, really interested to see what he looks out there. You know, a guy like Nolan Ziegler, you know, he was about 205 pounds as a senior. I actually happen to know he's up to 222 pounds now. I saw a photo of him recently. His parents had sent me, and you could see it. You know, he's added some size. And then another guy, Junior Tui Helamaka, I was thinking about Mike Linebacker. You know, it's Bo Bauer, J.D. Bertrand this year. Bo Bauer will be gone the following year. Maybe Junior Tui Helamaka becomes Bertrand's understudy and starts, you know, building his career. Mike, he's another really intriguing guy. Aiden Govira needs to add size. But what does that speed look like on the edge? And then I guess aside from the early enrollees, a couple guys who've been injured who I'm just thrilled to see soon, Kevin Bauman and Maris Liufa, of course.
I think you guys mentioned all the guys I had on the list. Yeah, you know, what I want to see, you know, guys that have been in the program maybe just 1 year, but there's doubt or concern as to how they're going to develop. Wouldn't you like to see Deion Colsey catch a 43-yard touchdown pass or Jaden Thomas score a touchdown?
Colsey scoring a touchdown in the spring game will not count in the Logan Diggs 100 yards.
Okay, No.
Okay.
No, it will now count. But, yeah, I mean, look, Rocco Spindler, wouldn't you like to see him, play productively? Kevin, I agree with you with Bauman. I really, for the first time, spent some time with him interviewing him a couple weeks ago, and I love his attitude and his approach. Mitchell Evans, I think, is a fascinating prospect because of his length and his athleticism and the fact that he was, still more quarterback than full-time tight end last year at this time. And then the early entries, because Mickey, we only had one full practice, but there were some guys that stood out that, you wonder, okay, is this a one-shot deal? And it hasn't been the case. Bracey's had a good spring. Jaden Mickey stood out. He's had, and there is a question about the order of draft, which we'll get into here in a bit, which I think is a little bit interesting. Burnham as an edge guy, Kevin Ziegler, I agree with you on him too. It's a guy that we've heard very good things about. And then the interior, all those young interior defense alignment that are the next rung of players, a defensive tackle and nose tackle. So there's a lot to keep an eye on, but that's the fun part, is when you can see some of these guys that maybe fans are down on, or you're not hearing too many good things about. And all of a sudden, Deion Colsey scores from 35 yards out, and the fans feel better about that going into the summer. Question from Swarbrick for Prez. What's more likely Saturday? Pine makes a case for a true quarterback competition. Pine is a solid backup, but Notre Dame's season is riding on Buckner's health. Or wow, Pine may actually end up being third string when the season starts.
The second one, right? Like,
yeah,
I think it's where that's Pine's level. I think that he's a good college backup quarterback at the Notre Dame tier. I mean, like if Drew Pine on Saturday be like, today was my last game at Notre Dame, I'm going to Northwestern, I'd be like, well, Northwestern's, I would think stock up for Northwestern. But, at Notre Dame level, trying to compete college football playoff, I think he's a great number two.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't really have much to add. I would just echo all of that.
If Pine comes out, he's going to play for both teams, so he's going to have tons of opportunities to succeed. So, he comes out and throws four touchdown passes Saturday, playing for two teams. That's going to prompt some people to say, hey, wait a minute. But I do think that it's more the second choice there, that Buckner is the guy that's ultimately going to win the job because his upside physically is greater because of the running option. And I think that ultimately, as he continues to fine tune his throwing motion, which I think has really come into line pretty much this spring, that he's going to be the guy. But I've said all along that Drew Pine is going to be needed. I don't have a problem with, because Buckner, let's say he's the starter, he'd be a first-time starter on a full-time basis, and he's struggling early in a game that you're struggling and you need a pick-me-up. I think Drew Pine is the guy to do that. I think he showed that last year on two occasions against good competition, and I think ultimately that's the pecking order that you want. I think that's the pecking order that gives Notre Dame the highest upside at the quarterback position. This was the question I referred to from TJ from PH70. How much weight should we put on the draft order for players within their positional groups? Coach Freeman seemed to suggest that the players cared about where they were picked and worked towards that. Does the draft give us any insight into spring performance or player movement? Kevin, I'm not sure that you know the order of how those guys were chosen. So Pete, what's your comment on that?
Well, so these are the guys that were drafted first at their position. Seniors were not draft eligible, so Foskey, Lindsey couldn't be drafted. So it went, and Pine was undraftable because Buckner was out. So it went Steve Angeli, Logan Diggs, Lorenzo Styles, Michael Mayer, Zeke Carell, Howard Cross, Maris Leafau, Clarence Lewis, Brandon Joseph. I think that Jaden Mickey was drafted higher than Barnes, Tucker.
He was.
Or Riley.
Yes.
I think it's probably indicative of something with Philip or with Jaden Mickey. That's beyond that, probably not. You know, Zeke Carell going number one in the offensive line, but I realize the offense, he's the only center, and the right. offensive line plays both ways. I'm not sure if that tells us a whole lot either.
Yeah, that the Gold had the first pick in the entire draft, and it was offensive lineman, and the Gold picked Carell, and then, of course, Fisher went next to the Blue. See, the Gold picked Carell because they knew they had a true center. And
the only one.
Right, and it didn't matter whether – I mean, then the Blue would pick Alt or Fisher, and the Gold would get the other one that wasn't picked there. So that was smart drafting by, I want to say, Dylan McCullough. I think that was their side of the ball. But a couple, and I could be wrong on some of these, but I don't think the order, because when they changed positions, then they would flip flop between Gold and Blue as to who had the first pick at the new position, but. Okay, for example, here Jaden Thomas, I believe, went ahead of Lorenzo Styles, which I don't really understand that, but and I could be wrong on that, but I don't think that I am. Jaden Thomas went ahead of Colsey, not a surprise. Mitchell Evans went ahead of Kevin Bauman, which is kind of surprising. As you said, Pete, Mickey was ahead of Barnes, Riley, Tucker. Price was ahead of Estime, which isn't a shock, a different type of back. So those were some of the ones that I saw that stood out a little bit. But a lot of it also was, like, especially when you talk about defensive line, offensive line, linebackers, you know, you have to kind of choose. It's not just linebackers. It's Mike linebacker, Will linebacker, Rover. So you have to kind of pick towards filling out across the board at positions. So that can be a little bit deceiving. But I thought it was an interesting question, and some of those were interesting picks along the way. Question from Jim Booney, CRS. Pete, you said you've been worried about Dante Moore taking an official visit to Oregon. Now that it's scheduled, do you have a pulse on how Notre Dame is feeling about Dante Moore?
I think it's something to be concerned about. Not because, like, the Oregon Ducks are this magical program steeped in tradition and high academics, but they've got an NIL machine there that is backed with some serious money. So that you have to be aware of that if you're Notre Dame. You got to figure out what your counter move is going to be in that situation.
Kevin, when you saw that Moore had scheduled a visit to Oregon, what was your reaction?
Well, you know, it's all part of, you know, kind of a nerve-wracking waiting game. And what I mean by that is, you know, first of all, again, we haven't been into this NIL situation very long, so it's still a little bit uncharted territory. Also, it's just the simple fact of you don't know exactly what schools are going to offer these top prospects of yours. And two, you don't know how they're going to react to that, you know, whether it'd be some flashy deal that will just, you know, end things and that's going to be the deal breaker. You just can't predict those things. And that's what's difficult. I think what's important for Notre Dame is they're confident in the relationship that they've built with Dante Moore. They're very confident in that on its own. Again, it goes back to, you don't know what other programs are going to kind of put on the table. And then again, how they're going to sort of react to that. And that's what sort of makes this difficult. And with the NCAA declining to sort of define the NIL, you get more into these deals that seem like they are outside of the bounds of what kind of NIL was supposed to be from the outset. And that's what's nerve-wracking.
Pete, this next question, I believe you're the one that brought up Ricky Purcell, the first that I saw of it anyway. It's from Woj to God. It's, are there any names to know about in the transfer portal as far as wide receivers? I'm going to comment about Ricky Pearsall, what I have seen of him on film. But what do you know about Notre Dame's interest and his interest in Notre Dame?
I mean, it's mutual for sure. that doesn't mean that it's automatic. I don't think that, I mean, people can read into this as they want, but going from Northwestern to Notre Dame or Harvard to Notre Dame is a little different than going from Arizona State to Notre Dame. So that's part of it. But I mean, if you're just looking at I think we said this on an earlier podcast, but like the type of receiver Notre Dame is looking for is a Power Five level or close to it receiver who's established, who doesn't have like this bizarre history of injuries, injury prone, if you will. They're trying to avoid that. And he's produced. Not somebody who feels like they got screwed out of playing time at a high end school and they're just looking for a fresh start. They're looking for somebody who's produced, who wants to take it up a level. And really, Pearsall fits that perfectly in terms of just sort of the athletic resume that Notre Dame feels like they can add.
Ricky Pearsall is 6'1", 200 pounds. His first 2 years in the program, he caught just 13 passes. Now, you had the pandemic year in there, and so the Pac-12 played half the games that everybody else did. But this past year, he caught 48 passes for 580 yards. So that's 12.1 per reception. He scored 4 touchdowns. They got the football. He was their leading receiver with 48 receptions. They got the football to him in a variety of ways, sometimes the quick out, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. He did have a 65-yard deep ball against UCLA that was pretty. He runs very well. He's quick, and he runs very well. He's threw for a touchdown. I saw a clip of that. He actually threw for a touchdown. But I love his stop and start ability, his cutting ability. He really has the ability to separate. You can align him at multiple positions, which is something that Tommy Reese would like. I saw an interview with his – maybe this is probably more information than it might be worth it, because we don't know whether he will end up at Notre Dame, but his position coach at Arizona State talked about that he was a physical player and that he was mentally tough. So Ricky Pearsall is a guy that is on Notre Dame's radar and vice versa. Are you guys aware of any other possible transfer receivers? It's been pretty quiet on that front, because I know that Tom Loy had reported that Notre Dame, that I don't think that they had really found the guy that they were looking for yet, that had already put his name in the portal. Did Pearsall do this recently, Pete? He hasn't been sitting there for a while. It was recent.
No. It was recently in. I may have been just 48 hours ago, but it was a very, very recent thing.
Kevin, you got anything any of this?
Yeah, I know that, you know, yesterday in our message board at Irish Illustrated, Tom Loy had mentioned another receiver by the name of Jalen Robinson out of Central Florida. You know, he'd originally gone to Oklahoma, transferred to Central Florida. I mean, he had in his sophomore year, 55 catches for 979 yards, 6 touchdowns. Shows that last season, however, only played in 6 games, but he had another 18 catches for over 300 yards. He's an exciting playmaker, so we'll sort of keep an eye on him as well. So it sounds like these two names we brought up are right now who to keep an eye on. But again, you got to remember, spring games are still coming. More guys are going to enter the portal, and they'll be, you know, spending a lot of time focusing on that post-spring game. So I'm sure more names are going to emerge.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm glad. Thank you for bringing up Jalen Robinson's name. I was aware of him, and it slipped my mind. So that's a couple to keep an eye on. And as you say, as spring football ends, as if there aren't enough players in the portal, there are going to be a lot more, I would imagine, as spring football ends, including perhaps some Notre Dame players. I mean, we don't like to name guys before the spring is concluded, but those are a couple, and we'll hear more moving forward. Irish from 2, it's 3rd and 6 late in the fourth quarter. You need a first down to win a game. Are you taking 2012 Tyler Eifert or 2022 Michael Mayer?
Ooh.
For me, I say there's no right answer here, but for me, I would roll with Mayer due to his like sheer intensity and like ultimate confidence. But man, I mean, there's no right answer there. What say you guys?
I feel like Reese has hinted that it's Mayer, and his credibility on this is high because Tyler Eifert is one of his best friends. So I think I'm gonna have to defer to the OC and give the slight edge to Mayer.
You know, I, I had a phrase when I was coaching when, okay, we can play this guy at this position or this guy at this position. And I would say choose and lose. In this instance, it's choose and win with either one of them. You know, I mean, I can't pick against Michael Mayer, but I would say that Tyler Eifert was a guy that his catch radius was probably a little bit larger. He was a little bit longer and you know, more sleek and agile per se. But choose and win there, man, whoever you want. Or let's put it this way. I'll let you guys have the first pick and be perfectly comfortable with the second pick. Question from Dutter25. Is there a real possibility that Braylon James gets reclassified? Kevin, you have some intel on this.
Yeah, so I sort of asked around about it, and it sounds like, you know, that idea was kicked around and perhaps is still kicked around. There's, you know, I wasn't able to dig up any answer as to whether that could actually happen or will actually happen. So it sounds like right now it's still something that's really just discussed, unless there's been a movement recently that I haven't heard of. But my initial response to this would be probably not. You know, I know that talking with Braylon and people around him a bunch this week around his commitment, I got on the phone with him for quite a while the day before he announced. You know, there's a lot of talk about his senior season and how he's transferring to Stony Point. And I know that there's some excitement there because he'll have a bit better talent around him. Del Valle's offense last year where he played struggled mightily, and there's a lot of talk about that. And I just don't know if there'd be so much talk about that if he was gearing up to, you know, to be in the 2020 class and play at Notre Dame this fall. So I don't know. My initial response is no, it's probably not going to happen, but it, you know, I was kind of surprised to learn that it was and is actually discussed.
Kevin, let me throw in, I didn't discuss this with you, but somebody else asked about commitment watch for this weekend. And a couple of names that were thrown out is Lamar, the running back, and Cervell, the offensive lineman. I presume they're both in town this weekend with many others. Any thoughts on those two guys and any other possibilities?
Yeah. So like, I mean, I'm not expecting like, you know, someone to just announce a commitment on their way out or something like that this weekend. Not saying that's impossible though. I've predicted Jaden Lamar to Notre Dame, and I'll say, you know, from a like personality and character sort of perspective, Lamar's one of my favorite kids in the class. He reminds me a lot of Tobias Merriweather, and those two are friends, played 7-on-7 together. I also found when I did a deep dive in his film, I was more talented than I had initially realized, and he verified for low 4.5 speed recently. And then there's Siervald, you know, kind of between Ohio State, Alabama, and Notre Dame there. You know, there's no indication that he's, you know, going to just announce soon. Who knows? Maybe after a really good visit, he decides to flip the switch and make that announcement. Not expecting that though. And then there's a couple of high profile receivers, Ronnie Gallagher and Jane Greathouse, visiting again. I would expect them to go on more visits. And, but you know, we'll see. It's going to be an exciting weekend. Lots of commits there as well. You know, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but yeah, I'm not expecting it right now.
And things are looking really good with offensive lineman Sam Pendleton, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And actually today, check out Irish Illustrated for my story on Pendleton. I got on the phone with his offensive line coach, his head coach, and his longtime trainer. Had long conversations with all three. And I put together a feature article on Pendleton that will be up on our front page today.
Question from ZWMS548. It was intimated on a podcast a few weeks back that the realignment of Alt at left tackle and Fisher at right tackle was in part to, quote, keep the peace. Not sure if you can go further, but if Fisher willingly accepted the right tackle spot to preserve team chemistry, that kid deserves an enormous amount of respect from the fan base. This is probably a question for me to answer, but Pete, you want to jump in on that?
I think I would only say that the LTRT is, I think we probably make too much out of that. I understand like the blind side part and like that's all important, but I think he stand intimated or said it. Fisher's a better run blocker.
Right.
Right side is a good spot to be. Right. Yeah. Two first round level tackles down the road. One's got to play right tackle. And it just happens to be Fisher.
Yeah. And I was going to bring that up. He stands said it, and it makes sense because you know, I mean, really long term. And I know that I said long term when Fisher came in that he would be guard, but he clearly proved me wrong there. But long term, I would anticipate that Fisher on the next level is a right tackle. I mean, he's a big, big dude, and right tackle makes a little bit more sense. Maybe it is overblown a little bit, Pete, but you know, there's prestige that comes with left tackle,
no doubt,
and a little bit more cash in the process. Kevin.
No, I fully agree. And I think it's a very simple and accurate answer. We got two, you know, guys who are going to be elite tackles, and Blake Fisher is a bit better of a run blocker. And it makes sense he plays right tackle. Joel played on the left side all season last year. Why change that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think it's a better fit. And both are going to play in the NFL. Both have an opportunity to be first round draft choices down the road. And both are going to be fine. Great players in the making. We're going to wrap up with a question from Murphy 324. And that is, Michael Mayer is universally referred to as the best player on the team. At this time next year, will we be referring to Blake Fisher in the same way? Aside from Tyler Buchner, is there another obvious candidate?
Yeah, I would say that the best case scenario, he said to, you know, this question was aside from Buchner. So we can't say him. I would just say the best case scenario would be if this time next year it was Buchner who's the best player. And I think that that's obvious. But who is there another obvious candidate? I mean, unless there is a, you know, breakout season from a guy like Lorenzo Styles or Chris Tyree, and then he returns, or Logan Diggs, you know, it very well could be Blake Fisher this time next year. However, when you're talking about the best player on the team, someone's going to lead you to the playoff, you're not often talking about an offensive lineman, right? It's usually a skill guy, a guy gets the ball in their hands, or at least, you know, a pass rusher. So, you know, I think one of those younger skill players like Lorenzo Styles or Logan Diggs, if they have a breakout this season, could be one of those guys. If not, Fisher or Buchner would probably be most likely, I would imagine.
I would agree. Styles was the guy I was going to say. You know, if you went with Leafau a year from now, that wouldn't blow me away either. Because I think statistically he's going to have an incredible year. I mean, it might be so good that he leaves, but I'd say Styles and Leafau. If you had to remove Buchner, those would probably be the first two guys I would go with.
The guys I wrote down were Styles, Alt, although I do think if we're comparing offensive linemen, we're probably still going to lean towards Fisher over Alt, although I think Alt's going to be a great player. Totally agree with Leafau. I think there's a possibility that Cam Hart, because of his length, let's put it this way, if he makes the same progress next year compared to the progress he made in the previous year, there's a chance of that happening. But I think my two top picks on defense, I would agree with Leafau, but my top pick would be Brandon Joseph, because if he continues what he started to do at Northwestern, then he's going to be a real standout. And I think we've already seen signs of that this spring. But ideally Tyler Buchner, I don't think that we'll be saying that, even if he has a solid first year to very good first year. I'm not sure that we're going to be saying Tyler Buchner, but hey, any one of those guys that we just mentioned competing for that mantle, that'd be just fine. It'd be a good thing for Notre Dame football. All right. Tomorrow is the Blue Gold game, April 23rd, kicking off at 1 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be back on Monday, April 25th for the next edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Thanks for joining us.